Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell. Guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, now let's get into the show.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters, your source for all things business. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to our website, missionmatters.com, and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Eric Billingsley on the line, and he's CEO and co-founder over at Calculi. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this.
All right, Eric. So we have a lot to cover today. So I love your theme. So software that matters. I mean, obviously we're Mission Matters over here. So the idea of talking about DevOps and what that means to you, your team's unique value proposition, and really how you're helping companies take things to market or improve things that they're already doing. I mean, it's quite a story. And I think the logical thing to get us started would be, let's just start with your story. So really, how'd you get started in this space?
Sure. It's a long story. I'm an old man, but I started out as a nuclear engineer. And then I left that and joined AltaVista and became the webmaster for AltaVista. After that, I went off to eBay, helped build the search engine for eBay, founded eBay Research Labs, did a stint in operations, left there to go to Google, did 2 years over in their operations organization, built the capacity planning function for Google, and then worked in the Maps software development organization for 2 years. When I left Google, I went over to Apple and created their Internet Services Operations organization. So there I was responsible for the day-to-day of iTunes, iCloud, Maps, and www.apple.com. And we had everything from SRE and some DevOps work there to security and hardware engineering. So it was a lot of fun. And I learned a lot through each of those steps in my career.
So, I mean, it's pretty obvious that you've only worked for small companies, Eric, right?
Yeah. I only work for companies that have an ambitious mission.
Yeah.
At Calculi, I think it's probably the most ambitious mission I've ever worked on.
That's awesome. So I want to go a little bit further into, and I'm not looking for trade secrets or anything like that, but I do want to talk a little bit more about your experiences there, because there's some other people that are in the field that are watching this that are maybe developing some of their own things and haven't had the luxury of working for those types of small companies that you mentioned a moment ago. So like, what kind of advice would you give to some people that are out there from lessons learned that you've kind of seen along the way? And I know that's a broad and a big question. We could spend 5 hours on that one, but like, what pops to mind?
Well, the biggest thing is it's really hard to build something that you haven't seen. And what I find is that, and you know, this is really goes to the founding of our company, but you know, when I talk to companies that are trying to build these capabilities inside their organizations, what I find is that they're kind of reaching in the dark. They're reading papers, they're talking to analysts, they're getting bits and pieces of how things work, but they're having real hard time pulling that together and turning that into something that can actually deliver results. And so, you know, when I was at eBay, I joined this group called CTO Forum and met some amazing people there. But the important thing was I kept running into company or people at companies like GE and Verizon and all these large companies that were having very similar problems to us, but they weren't able to solve these problems in the same way I saw them solved at Google, right? As an example. And so we just had amazing conversations there. And a lot of those would turn into them actually going back home and trying to implement these bits and pieces. But all of those had struggles. And so, you know, over time, you know, I finally started, you know, consulting sometimes with some of these guys and helping them through those struggles. And so I got a lot of exposure to a lot of very different organizations. And so it's given me a unique perspective on how to solve the same problems, but in multiple contexts. Right. And that's really what has culminated in us creating our product, GuideRails.
Man, love it. Great tips of advice there. And I do want to, like, so CTO forum. So you just mentioned that. Maybe define what that is. But in the context behind this is, you know, I tell people this all the time. So they're like, well, I don't have all your answers, first of all, but there's other organizations and there's other people like that there are working towards similar goals, whether it's industry-wide, normally industry, you know, niches are best. So things like CTO forum, to where those conversations and that interaction, that's what those other perspectives, I mean, to me, that's the difference between success and failure in any field. And that's just my personal opinion. Tell us a little bit more about CTO Forum and just kind of what that's meant to you in general.
Yeah. So it's a great organization. It was founded about 13 years ago by my good friend and co-founder, Bashir Janjua. He's actually the founder for our company. And he just started it out as a getting together of executives from these large companies to just talk about their problems. Because when you're a CTO or a CIO in a large company, you've got lots of people complaining to you and you've got no one you can complain to. And so just having a safe space to have those conversations was really the goal. And so he pulled that together. You know, we had Werner Vogel was actually at one of the first dinners. We've had just amazing people come join. And over the years, it's evolved. So we actually just had an event last week with 130 CTOs and CIOs from companies all over the world on Zoom. And now it's in collaboration with Harvard Business School, and it really attracts just an amazing set of people. But the really cool thing about it is it's a safe space. And so we can hash out our issues together and say, hey, you know, I'm having trouble recruiting this kind of talent. How are you guys doing? Or, you know, I've got this problem getting my systems to hit a certain availability mark on top of this software. What are you guys doing about that? And you can have those conversations and learn from each other, which is just fantastic.
Those Rockefeller days where it's industrial, like cutthroat, like, no, it's like we can all progress through collaboration and sharing and exchanging ideas. I mean, I just feel fortunate to be alive in the day and age and business that we're doing business in, because what you just now said, once upon a time would be unheard of. Wait a minute. So you get together with the competition and you talk about your problems so that you can solve, so everybody can solve everybody's problems, which makes sense. But in the past, let's just say it may not have been that way.
Well, we get stronger together.
Exactly.
Right. And Bashir goes off all the time on how if we don't collaborate, we're going to end up being weaker as a country for it. And so what he's really trying to do is build that space so that we can come together, help solve each other's problems, so that as an industry, we can all grow.
Wonderful. Let's change it up a bit. So I do want to get into Calculi and the founding. I know you mentioned one of the co-founders you met there. I mean, tell us a little bit more. So you're working at all these big companies. I mean, huge names, eBay, Apple, I mean, AltaVista. I mean, you're working at these big companies and then you decide to found with your co-founders Calculi. Like, how'd that come about?
Yeah. So it actually started with the CTO Forum. So, you know, Bashir's the founder of CTO Forum. He's the founder of Calculi. Robert Boyd, he is our CTO. He was actually driving the digital transformation at Gap. And we met while he was at the CTO Forum as well. And so we're the three co-founders. But it really goes back to Apple. So when I first landed at Apple, I inherited what was an early sort of DevOps system. And the iTunes team in particular was actually having trouble with delivering software as quickly as they wanted to go. And so Bashir and his team had been working at PayPal and these other companies, helping them kind of understand their software development practice and clean it up. And so I pulled him in to actually map out the process that we had. Because at that point, iTunes had been going for about 12 years. And the entire process was, well, when I'm done with my piece, I throw it over to Jake. When Jake's done with his piece, I have no idea what he does with it. So we stitched all of that together for them and found that there were some really critical points that they were having trouble. And so Bashir and I basically did some brainstorming on how we could clean that up. We leveraged a lot of my learnings from Google and came up with a plan to automate major steps of that process. And so we did a proof of concept of that. It was a big success. And then Bashir took that. And as he was working with all these other companies, he's like, hey, it's the same problem over and over and over. And so all these companies are building these teams of 20 to, you know, I've seen some with over 100 engineers working on their DevOps infrastructure. That's a huge investment. That's millions of dollars. And in most cases, it's not working well. And so Bashir and I kept talking about it. And we're like, you know, someone's just got to solve this. DevOps is a collection of little tools, most of them open source products that solve 30-minute slices of what for most companies is a six-month problem. And if you're optimizing 30-minute slices, it's going to take you a long time to make a meaningful impact. But we are able to, because we take much more of an end-to-end view of it. So we get everything from code commit all the way out to cloud deploy, and then we collect data through the whole process. And so we give you a depth of understanding of what's going on that allows you to drive performance and audit trails and everything you need to really develop software that matters at speed and at high quality. And you're just not going to get that by using off-the-shelf open source components and trying to piece it together yourself. And so we started talking to all these different companies about their unique needs. And we found out the needs aren't that unique. They're all very similar. And so it felt to us like a CRM back in the 90s, right? Where every company is out building their own CRM process. And then Salesforce comes in, right? And everyone switches over almost overnight, it felt like. It was a decade, but it felt like it was overnight. And I think we're about to hit that same sort of breaking point with DevOps. And so what we're doing is really pulling that together, pulling together the process, pulling together the data, pulling together the automation to allow engineers to get their software to their customers very quickly and with high quality.
No, this is great. And I love your example, by the way, for CRMs, because I didn't grow up in that age of building your own. So in my age, I always had off the shelf. It was just a matter of, did I want to spend more for something like a Salesforce, or do I want Zoho, or do I want... So that was just my age, dating myself. You've been in this industry longer than me. But that being said, I did work at big companies that had these other legacy CRM systems that you're like, where'd they get this? And they're like, oh, they built this. This is why.
That's right. And it turns into a big sunk cost problem for them, right?
For sure.
Yeah, if you've invested tens of millions of dollars, it's really hard to move off to something, even if it's an order of magnitude better. But the payback is enormous. And so for the companies that are willing to make that move, we're going to see the same thing in this space.
So let's get a little bit, so software that matters, solving, working in the DevOps space to solve problems that are happening over and over again at companies that, even though some companies may think they're unique problems, they're probably not in many cases. And then there's other companies with the exact same problems, hence the CRM example. Let's get a little bit more specific. Like, can you, let's get, put some meat around this. Like, what specifically are you doing that you feel is maybe a different value proposition in this DevOps space?
Sure. So let's just talk about the day in life of an engineer, right? So if you're doing real DevOps, your engineers are actually responsible for the quality of their applications all the way from cradle to grave. So if something goes wrong in production, the engineers are fixing it. If something's you know, not being tested, it's the engineer's job to write those tests and get it tested. Most companies aren't there yet. And so it's still a distributed set of jobs. So you still have QA teams who are writing tests. You still have ops guys who are deploying the code. Mm-hmm. And everything turns into a big finger point, right? When something goes wrong.
Yeah.
In our system, what we've done is really made everything configuration is code, policy is code, and we have data collection of every step in the process. So I see every project that you put in Jira. I see every commit you put in Git. I see every test you run. I see every deployment you do. I see configuration changes. I see you change passwords to databases, right? All of that is visible. And so for the engineer, we're able to pull all that data up and actually show it to them at the same time they're running their builds. They can see the impact of every change they make.
Wow.
And when they're doing their deployments, everyone has full visibility into every step of that process. And they can see what's gone into it or what hasn't gone into it. They can see when the security alert pops up. They can see when a deployment fails. They can see the logs from each of those events all together. And by pulling it all together and by making it visible across the teams, you now have people in a mode where they can really collaborate. In most companies today, the engineers, maybe they see their Jenkins world and they see their builds and their unit tests, but all the real tests are happening in QA. Mm-hmm. And QA, to protect their world, they have a troll at the gate who says, you can only push code to me once a week or once a month or whatever. Yeah. And so imagine you're a software developer. It takes you one day to code something up and push it to your customer. And then it just sits there for a month.
Wow.
And then QA finally touches it. They find a problem, they kick it back to you. It may be 2 months later. How many projects have you gone through since then? And now you're working on it again. You have to get your mindset back into that. That's why things take so long. With our system, everything can be automated. Every single step in that process. The QA engineers, the software developers, they can collaborate on how they're going to test something. Mm-hmm. And so that one day, maybe it's a day and a half now. But at the end of that day and a half, it's in the customer's hands.
Wow.
And it totally changes the way you work. So one of our largest customers is a large European bank. Mm-hmm. We work with the trading team. So it's the software developers who are actually writing software for the traders. Mm. Well, the traders, when they need a change, it has value in the millions of dollars a minute.
Yeah.
And they're waiting 6 months to get the software.
Wow.
Their turnaround time on GuideRails is an hour and a half. 6 months to an hour and a half.
I think some people watching this right now are like, wait a minute. So if you think about, I like that you bring up a banking example, by the way, because banking, trading, I mean, highly regulated space. That's so right. I like that you bring up that example because maybe there's some people out here that even aren't in as quite a regulated space that are thinking like, that can't work for me because we have XYZ problem. Well, if it can work for a bank and something regulated right. like that, then that kind of takes that excuse off the table, if you will. But I would like you to go further into just the regulated space, kind of spaces in general, whether it's banks or pharmaceuticals or otherwise, other niches you may work in, and kind of give us a glimpse into what kind of problems you're solving for them.
Sure. So we're actually doing a lot of work with fintech at the moment. We're also working in the medical space and biotechnology space, and we're moving into manufacturing as well. So these regulated industries, what they have in common is that they need audit trails. They need the ability to understand who asked for that feature, who built that feature, how did they test it, and when did the customer get it?
Yeah.
Right? So that end-to-end traceability. And so if you don't have that in one system, you can spend a lot of time. We talked to one particular company in the UK, and they estimate that their engineers are spending 20% of their time just dealing with compliance.
It's expensive.
Imagine that. 20% of your engineer capacity going to compliance, just figuring out that train of events.
Wow.
So that you can do that, get that together for a report for the auditors so that they can be ready for the regulators. That's why people start getting slower and slower and slower. The bureaucracy builds up around them. Mm-hmm. So the engineers are stuck and they only spend, you know, we've actually done some analysis on this. And in most companies, engineers spend 20% of their time coding. So 80% of their time is spent doing other things. So
wow.
We just heard for this one client's 20% in compliance. We find a lot of it is in just upfront planning, capacity planning, all that sort of stuff, scoping, trying to figure out what they can shove through their limited pipes, right, mm-hmm. to get to the customer. If you move to a mode where you can deliver to the customer in under a day, 90% of that goes away.
Yeah.
So when, you know, Robert Boyd, our CTO, when he was at Gap and he did this transformation for Gap, they actually saw a 3X improvement in product flow. Gee. That's the goal that you can go to, right, for this sort of transformation. If you do it right, if you understand how to drive it in the right direction, if you mm-hmm. automate the proper steps, if you really focus on automating your testing so that you never have those trolls at the gate whose job is to prevent change. Mm. From making it to the customer before it's, you know, fully tested. If you can get out of that mode, the payback is just enormous. So for them, I think it was something like a $600 million a year value.
Wow. Wow. And, I mean, that's yeah. significant. And I'm noticing a common theme here. Well, number one, well, there's a couple of them. Number one, obviously you want your engineers doing their, you know, their highest value work. So that's a big deal. Like you want the assets that you're investing in to be deployed more accurately. So whether it's a, like you said, a 30 person team, maybe you don't have to hire a 30 person team, or maybe you still hire that 30 person team, but you're getting them, you're getting more products out or however their management exactly right. is. But the bottom line is that they're not you're not wasting your time on, you know, one of your most expensive employees, for lack of better words, right?
Way beyond that. So, you know, I'm going to digress for just a second here, but if you're able to deliver product quickly, everything changes. So let's step back and think about that customer that can only deliver once every 6 months. How much experimentation can you do if it takes you 6 months to put an experiment out in the wild? And how much risk are you going to take with that experiment?
Yeah.
Almost none. The reason banks feel like banks is because that risk appetite is so low because the expense is so high. And so if we can get it to a mode where experiments are free, then companies can try things out much more quickly. And failures aren't expensive. And so your risk appetite can go up. And so you can really start to change not only the way you think about software development, but the way you think about your business. And that unleashes innovation in a way that I haven't found anything else in my career that does that. You have to have that speed, that ability to have multiple turns, you know, at that crank to try things out with your customers so that they can get the value immediately. And that payback is just huge. And that's really what we're trying to drive for these companies. Can you imagine that in areas like finance?
Yeah.
In areas like, you know, manufacturing or healthcare, right? You know, when healthcare.gov went up, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
The guys who went in to fix that actually came from eBay. Right. And they were going after operational fixes. But then a couple of friends of mine from Google went in later and they became part of the fix it crew for the government. And they were applying these exact same sorts of philosophies of quick turns, cheap experiments. And that's how you get rapid improvement. So I think there's a whole generation of engineers that have been held back by bureaucracy that we're going to unlock and unleash. And out of that is going to become a true improvement in productivity. You know, if you look back over the last 50 years, with computers coming in, we've seen a lot of improvements in profitability. We've seen a lot of improvements in kind of speed to market, but we haven't seen a huge productivity boost. If you look at the data, you know, the biggest productivity boost in history came with air conditioning. This is the way we're going to unlock the productivity boost from computers.
Oh man, that's exciting. And I mean, the key here that you've mentioned multiple times really is speed. So right. speed is what's changing everything. Speed, and obviously, you know, if you can make these experiments free, you know, and quick, and not have much pain to reorganize, that's another big, big component that fits into it all. But what it also does, though, just on the higher level, in my opinion, is it's making, you know, some of these large companies more flexible to think more like a startup. And I think a lot of the companies, if we look back, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, when we think about the idea of a disruptor and how companies are disrupted, it's typically due to an innovation by a startup that kind of eats the incumbent's lunch, so to speak. So why? Because they're quicker, they're more agile, whether it's the tools, lack of legacy systems, like these new, like the challenger banks that are coming up, which you think about a challenger bank that has everything online or all these other things, and how are they able to do this so fast and provide XYZ that a large bank that you've been with 20 years may not at this point be able to do? And you kind of sit back and wonder. And I think you answered the question today. It's not that the large bank doesn't want to, it's that it's a very, very costly and timely proposition that might take that large bank a year to make one little small, simple change, where the challenger bank, that just because they're smaller, they, you know, are operating on different systems, no legacy systems, things like that, they can implement newer features that feel better and have a better better platform feel than maybe some of the other ones quickly because of the processes and things you're talking about. So now it kind of flips the table back to where, okay, well, if these incumbents, if you will, are which have the resources, have the manpower, have the knowledge, but maybe don't have the processes that you're managing or the ability due to the DevOps, really this gives them more of an opportunity to innovate themselves and to disrupt the space themselves, so to speak.
That's absolutely right. That was a big thing that concerned me in my career, especially when I was at eBay. You know, I talked briefly about how I moved from, search engine development and research labs over to operations. I get questions all the time. Why would you do that? Because I loved working on the search engine. I loved research labs, but I moved over to operations because it was taking us 6 months to get a server.
Wow.
And if it was taking us that long to get hardware equipment, we couldn't actually push our innovations. Hmm. The same problem I was wrestling, you know, I was talking about earlier, where if it takes you 6 months, your appetite for experimentation goes down. Mm-hmm. We were hitting that. Mm-hmm. And so I had to fix it. And so, you know, I volunteered. I went over and I pulled apart that process of hardware development or hardware deployments. It was 12 tickets to get a server installed, and all of them had a 2-week SLA. So I pulled everybody into a room once a week. We resolved all 12 tickets at once, and our delivery time went from 6 months to 2 weeks for 95% of the hardware orders.
Wow.
Suddenly you're in a different world, right?
Yeah.
And that's the power of changing the process. Everyone was doing a good job before. They were all hitting their objectives. They were all delivering for their customers. They were all doing exactly what they said they were going to do. Check, check, check. But the outcome wasn't what people needed.
Mm.
And so when you kind of turn things back and you say, what are we trying to achieve? And what is our process for achieving that new goal? That's when magic happens.
Mm.
And so that's what we bring. Our product is an embodiment of that. And one of the big things that we solve for customers, you know, I talked about cloud deployments. Mm-hmm. Our system, we can install it in the data center running on VMware. You can build your application for deployment in that environment. Mm-hmm. And with a config change, I can have you in AWS, Azure, or Google, or a Kubernetes cluster.
Mm.
Right? And so your fear around hardware availability evaporates, right? You can go into ephemeral test environments. You can do all these things that most companies just kind of don't even think about because their security requirements mean they can't go directly to the cloud.
Hmm.
I'm opening that up for them and making essentially a cloud inside their data center that they can now finally leverage. And so it's been a huge value add that we brought to some of our customers, you know, and on top of that, you know, I don't do anything small. Mm-hmm. So everything that we built on top of allows us to scale. Mm-hmm. And so the same system, you can install it for 10 developers or you can install it for 10,000. Wow. It's the same application. And so it really is intended to scale for these large organizations, which right now, if you look in the space, nothing is really meant to do that. If you look at, you know, I don't want to name my competitors, but there's quite a few in this space. And other than the cloud providers, none of them think about scale. And with the cloud providers, they're offering you a very disjointed set of capabilities mm-hmm. that you still have to pull together. You know, my favorite is a certain cloud provider has a wonderful sheet that you can read. It's a 25-step process for storing a database secret and using it. It will take you all day wow. to run through those 25 steps. For us, open up a little window, add in the secret. It's available to everybody below that in your hierarchy.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Simplifying these things, allowing the engineers to really own the process, allowing them to move quickly, and then reflecting back the security outputs, the mm-hmm. code scanning, the test output, the logs, all of that coming back to them in one UI mm-hmm. allows them to own it responsibly. And everyone wants to do a good job. So if you just give them the data to do it, they'll do it.
That's awesome. It makes total sense. I want to talk a little bit more about your team and just sure. and what makes you so unique. So we can already see based on our discussion, you know, what you're doing at Calculi, the value proposition is unique and it's different. What makes the people that are or the team that are pulling this off unique?
Well, the big thing is that we've done it. Right. And we've done it with those other tools. Mm-hmm. We just weren't able to do it in the way we wanted to because we didn't have the platform yet. And so, you know, Bashir Jandra, he has worked with in depth, amazing companies from all over the gambit in terms of size and need and everything else. He ran a software development organization that helped build the e-commerce engine for HP. Right. He's worked with Walmart. He's worked with PayPal. He's worked with all these great companies mm-hmm. and just bringing that experience to the group has been amazing. And especially those relationships, because we're able to talk to those companies and ask them about, you know, their challenges and build that into the product. Mm-hmm. And then Robert Boyd, he's our CTO, having led that digital transformation at Gap. You know, driving a large team of engineers to have the data they needed in order to perform, having the management have visibility into the metrics to drive that. We baked every bit of that into our system. Mm. And so, and you know, my experience at Google and eBay and Apple has been really important for understanding how to drive a cultural transformation as well, right? So, you know, building a research lab in eBay, you know, if you've ever read any of the old papers on how eBay ran with train seats and all that sort of stuff, yeah. It was all about throughput, very little about outcomes. mm-hmm. And so research labs was all about outcomes.
Yeah.
And being able to create that safe environment for experimentation, that was a political battle as much as anything else. And then at Google, you know, building up that capacity planning muscle inside something as big as that, you know, where we were doing capacity planning at the level of megawatts, right? So how many tens of megawatts per quarter are we going to deploy in what regions of the world? That was our building block, right?
Wow. Huge.
So you think about things very differently. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to Apple, it was a complete cultural transformation. I walked into a team of 90 system administrators and DBAs who are running NetApp filers and Oracle databases, right? And moving that organization to be one of the largest web operators in the planet. You know, by the time I left, we built our own internal storage capability with 2 exabytes of storage, right? You don't do that unless you're at the top of your game.
Yeah.
And so getting the team from, you know, the 90 SAs and DBAs, all great people, but transforming that into a full SRE organization and DevOps organization and with security and hardware and all these capabilities built in, it was 1,000 people when I left.
Right? Wow.
But the amount of capability we brought to the table was orders of magnitude beyond that growth as well. And so understanding how to drive these transformations, that's actually the secret sauce. And we have put as much of that into our product as we possibly can. And we're going to continue to evolve that. And we're actually building out the framework for building the AI underneath to drive transformation more consistently and give engineers more visibility and data so that they can actually improve as engineers as well. So we've got a lot of tricks up our sleeve yet to come, but the team is unique, and our learnings and understanding of the customer problem is truly unique.
Fantastic. Well, Eric, this has been awesome having you on the show today. I learned a lot about Calculi, what you've done, why you're doing it, and really how you're driving innovation in your industry. And I just think it's awesome. And I look forward to following you, following the company, following the founders and your work. That being said, if somebody is listening to this or watching this and they want to learn more about Calculi, I mean, what's the best way for them to follow up and to get information?
Yeah. So our website, calculi.com, redirects you to guiderails.io. That's our product. So please come visit us, learn about us, and contact us. All the information you need is right there.
Perfect. All right. Well, Eric, thank you again for coming on the show. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. Hope you got a lot of value out of this. If you did, don't forget, hit that subscribe button, share this video with friends and people that you think can use it. And we have more great guests coming up for you. And Eric, thanks again for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Adam.